I want people to just really feel welcome, but I also want them to take responsibility for their education and empowerment too. Not just, you know, pretty pictures or pretty art, but like really learn about each other, learn about the world, and contribute your own voice to it.
This is Studio Confessions, the art and wellness podcast. I'm your host, Luis Martin, the art engineer. Let me take you with me. Listen in for conversations with artists and culture makers alike. As we talk about their creative practice and what moves them, let me share my wax poetic monologues and how to activate your creativity to live an inspired and more beautiful life. That's right, I said beautiful. Welcome to the studio. I'm glad you're here.
Hey, Kat.
Hey. Thank you so much. I'm wonderful. How are you today?
I'm great. It's overcast, but it's a beautiful day. We're here, and I'm so excited to get to know a little bit about your practice, Kat. What do you do?
Thank you so much. I'm super excited to chat with you, too. So I do all the things. I'm an artist. I'm an artpreneur. I'm the founder of Create Magazine, and I'm also a coach for women artists. So I do a little bit of it all, but I love it, and I can't seem to pick one thing.
I love asking that question to people who wear multiple hats like myself. What do you do? Because it just throws them in a tailspin. You're like, well, where do I start? And which one of these hats did you start with, do you think?
I would say it would be painting. I was always a creative kid. You know, I would sew my own clothes for the Barbies and, you know, make snow sculptures. Like, I always wanted to use my hands to make things. And, you know, a little bit of piano. So I was always interested in multiple mediums. But I think painting is something that stuck with me because when we moved to America, it was the easiest thing to continue doing because I didn't have the resources to do piano and I didn't know anyone. So drawing and painting is just the most kind of natural and easiest way to be creative, I think, for a lot of people. So that was the first.
That's amazing. You're originally from Vladimir, Russia. Is that right?
Yep, that's right.
That's amazing. Yeah,
we moved with my mom in 2001, so it was quite a transition.
Wow, in 2001, your English is perfect, I must say.
Thank you. Yeah, I was a teen when I moved, so I think that helped. My mom still has a super strong accent, but
I love accents. But let me ask you, was your art encouraged by your parents?
I would say so. My grandfather was creative. He was always drawing. I don't think anyone ever imagined it would be a career per se. It just wasn't something that was culturally. I think people just had that starving artist stereotype over there. But I think art and culture in general is celebrated in Russia. It just wasn't necessarily something that people thought of as a way to earn an income or support yourself. So no one ever discouraged me, and everyone always, you know, whenever they could, gave me classes and sent me to art school for kids. But it was never something that was meant to be a job.
Right. And that's something that I was going to ask you next, is kind of the cultural relationship to art is so different in other countries like Russia than it is here in the U.S. Here in the U.S., it's seen as a career option, but something that has to be marketed and funneled, right? So I'm wondering, was that transition kind of natural for you? Were you kind of like, yeah, I can totally vibe with this? Or did you feel a bit of resistance?
I'm not even sure. I'm pretty stubborn. So once I set my mind to something, like even in high school when I was in the U.S., like the guidance counselor was like, probably should go for like international business since you know another language. You know, it wasn't something that people encouraged me to pursue as a career. But I think I just didn't have anything else that I liked doing. I tried everything. And so for me, I just wanted to do what I love, no matter what the cost. And I knew it was going to be scary. And it was.
Yeah. I can totally relate to that.
For sure. How about you?
Well, I mean, it was the only thing I could do as well. And it's so funny that you're saying that, you know, they presented you with so many options. Now, I've seen your work, so I can't imagine anybody telling you to go to something else. Your work is really... It's very impressive. I love it because there's something very loose yet very traditional about it. You're kind of in this really beautiful space. Can you describe your work to us?
Yeah, so it's something funny too, talking about my work, because I feel like I'm always transitioning. So the past decade, the work that you're referring to, I was doing a lot of interiors and sort of using the subject of the interior to explore paint. Some of it was more tight and representational. Some of it almost got on the verge of abstract. So a lot of the paintings were kind of moody. Some were pastel color, kind of candy colored, and some were even a little dark. So I almost just used it as a vehicle to explore whatever moods and energies I had at the time. And also as a way to celebrate space and home. You know, I think that's a topic that, especially the past year, so many of us have to think about. Like, what does it mean to you? What does it mean for you to be safe and to be locked down? And it was funny last year when the lockdown was first announced, and I thought about how relevant my work is, but then at the same time, I knew I had to move on from it. It was almost like I made all that for that moment, and I'm like, okay, I'm ready to do something else.
Yeah, I love that. Well, I mean, I think it's really interesting too, because you imbue each painting with so much emotion, this energy that you're talking about, because, I mean, you can look at a still life of a banana. A banana's a banana, but the way people can make an object just be so many more things. In your paintings, it feels there's a lot of, I get a sense of time. You know, it's kind of like nostalgic but present. It's fantastic. It's fabulous. What themes or ideas are you working in your current work?
So I'm still very much all about the feels, all about the emotions. So I love to explore sort of psychology and dreams and a little bit of fantasy in my work, and I don't know why, just it didn't feel right up until this moment to explore it. I was just very much in that, like, safety of the subject matter, you know, and I'm grateful for that, because that work opened up a lot of opportunities for me. But as I was going through my own healing journey, sort of my spiritual awakening, sobriety, I felt more safe to share who I really was beneath that. So it was almost like, you know, part of the journey that got me to where I am now. I'm not sure. It's so funny. It's hard to talk about the work you're making now because you don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't know where it's taking you, but it is exciting. So a little more animals, more kind of not really a perspective, just kind of using it as a dreamlike space, I think. But stay tuned. Come back to me.
I love it. I can't wait.
I'm a little deeper into it.
Well, you also mentioned dreams. What language do you dream in?
That's a great question. People ask me that. I have no idea. I almost think the dreams have their own language, because there's no way that I can pinpoint, you know? Like, I don't remember any phrases or specific words from my dreams.
Really? I'm pretty sure I dream in French, even though I don't speak much French anymore, but or ever, really, in this life anyway.
That's beautiful. That's one of the languages I definitely want to learn.
Yeah, I'm sure you can pick it up very easily. What have been some of the most surprising things in adapting to American environment?
I think in the beginning, it was definitely the shock of what you see on TV versus the reality,
like,
of
what
American life is like, and everyone at home thinking that you won the lottery and you have all this money now and wanting something from you. Not to blame them. That was what they were, you know, experiencing. That's the information they received. So I think just realizing how hard it was going to be to build a new life, and then just coming to terms and accepting that.
Yeah.
That fact.
Well, that's really interesting, because So you created a magazine, correct? Create Magazine. Mm-hmm. Do you think you would have been able to do that in Russia?
Mm-mm. No way.
Isn't that amazing? Can you tell me a little bit about your journey with creating the magazine?
Yeah, that's something that... So the magazine originally started because I was really frustrated. Like, I wanted to be a part of the art world. I just couldn't find a place. I was not, you know, not in my local community, and I wasn't at a place where I could move somewhere. So I just wanted to create something to be a part of it, basically, and offer that opportunity to others. So initially it was that vision. But as it grew and as I got to meet more people, I realized the need for community in the arts, just the need to feel like you're a part of something. So that still very much drives the magazine. And also kind of not treating it as, you know, high level curator gallery with emerging artists, kind of combining those and hearing both of those perspectives. That's been something really interesting too, because one, it creates a more inclusive environment for people, and two, we all get to learn from each other. You know, the curators get to hear the needs of the artist gets to see the perspective of the, you know, museum and gallery, and, you know, editors and all that. So just opening up that conversation, that's something that's really driving me right now. And we're actually celebrating 5 years of Create, and it's 7 years of total independent publishing. So.
Congratulations. That's huge. That's huge. Wow. Yeah, I think that's fabulous that you're doing this, because it's not only kind of restructuring the art world, but it's not participating in this cancel culture. You know, you're not like, we're not talking to the curators, we're not talking to the museums. It's like, no, let's all meet on the same level and have a conversation, because that's so important. Because at the end of the day, I really feel that curators are artist champions, right?
We are.
And as an artpreneur myself, I think, oh, well, people just need encouragement, or they just need tools. But the fact of the matter is that we need a lot more than that, because it isn't in every artist to want to be an entrepreneur, and they shouldn't have to be. Or it isn't in every artist to write a statement, and it shouldn't have to be, right? We have our talents. So what have been some of the interesting conversations that have come out of the magazine, or some of your favorites?
I love what you just said. It's like just having the knowledge and the freedom to make decisions for yourself, whether you want to start your own business or you want to go to the traditional route. I love that. I totally encourage that as well. I never want to demonize the gallery system.
Totally.
There's no place for it. I'm sorry, what was your question again? I just got
Yeah, no, totally. You know, I get passionate sometimes, and I'm like, no, down with the galleries. but it isn't productive, right? It's not going to get us anywhere. So I love that you've created this space to kind of let's all meet and champion each other. So I'm wondering, what are some conversations that have come up in Create that have kind of stuck with you, or been some of your favorite conversations?
Yeah, some of my favorite conversations, some of the most difficult conversations happened last year, you know, when Black Lives Matter was at the forefront of the news and everything, rightfully so. And you know, just being willing to hear the thoughts and the needs of our community. And, you know, it was a lot of it was just humbling ourselves and listening and learning what the steps are. And so what we heard was not this drive to like exclude or create these like almost, I don't know, impulsive opportunities for people, but to really embed and have a longer vision. And I think what was happening was a lot of brands were acting and showing what they were doing and really like holding back the urge to do the same thing and just be like, no, this is like our 10-year strategy to make sure that everything we do, we have like a scanner now, you know, with this new awareness, with this new information. So that has been really helpful and healing, I think, for our community as well, even though we don't get to boast about it and say like, look what we're doing, but just knowing in our heart and on paper, like that we're taking the right steps. And then some of the other interesting things, like one of my favorite things that happened was Jerry Saltz agreed to be on our podcast and just shared his his out there thoughts, you know, about what he thinks the art world will be like. And then honestly, just hearing about other artists meeting with each other, collaborating, creating their own platforms and opportunities, like those are the things that really excite me. But so many every day.
That's amazing. I'm so glad you brought up Black Lives Matter, because I think, that wasn't even on my radar when I asked the question. And what a great opportunity to have a platform to deal with this and kind of recommit to a 10-year plan that is inclusive, that is responsive. So that's fantastic. You just also kind of blew my mind. 10-year plan. How, you know what I mean? How does a 10-year plan come to be for a creative entrepreneur, right? Because as artists, we don't know what we're doing in our series at the moment. So it's something that's like, how do I plan for 10 years? How have you found your business savvy as you go?
Yeah, that's a great question. Something that I'm exploring every single day. And I think that it was, for me personally, not even just as a business owner, but as a human, I think stepping out of survival mode has been really helpful in seeing the bigger picture, because I, you know, grew up poor. We didn't have any money. So it was every day, like, do we have enough to eat? Can we pay our bills today? And sometimes the answer was no. So living in that mindset and making decisions on today is not really great for business, right? Because you're not really serving anyone and you're just kind of going through the motions. And sometimes that's necessary. I certainly have thanked myself for showing up even when it was like that. But, you know, I forced myself last year. I'm like, I don't want to live in this reactive state anymore. I want to be proactive. I want to be an ally to my community and myself. I don't want to just let the wind sway me wherever direction is blowing. So I had to do a lot of deep work. And my partner is really supportive, too. And he was, every time he saw me, you know, trying to launch something or trying to do something that wasn't in alignment with my big dream, like, he would call me out, which was really helpful, too. But I think the premise is just to allow yourself the space and the safety, even if it's just with yourself or with people you trust, to dream really, really big. Like, one of the great questions is, like, you know, if money were no object and I didn't care what people thought of me, like, what would I actually want to create? And sometimes the answer is something really, really ambitious. And sometimes the answer is letting go of something and just stopping doing it altogether. So that's been super helpful to kind of process life through that lens. And then, of course, you know, last year also mortality was, you know, as dark as it is, something, a reminder, like, time is not guaranteed. So 10 years might seem relevant, but at the same time, it's also, it made it more relevant in a way, like, well, I want to work towards that. If I am on this earth and I can contribute in some way, I want to think about it from, like, a giving, confident place and not just like a victim of my life, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, when you mentioned, you know, what would you do if you had all of the money in the world? And that's such a great question to get to. Personally, I actually just had this conversation with my partner yesterday, my husband, and I was telling him, well, you know, let's prepare to win the lottery. But even if I had all the money in the world, I would still be doing my projects, my collage kits, you know, like, I love it. It makes me so happy. I want to keep doing that, even if I'm a millionaire. You know, so that's fantastic. Also, in thinking about coming from poverty, how did you switch that narrative? Because a lot of people stay in that trauma. A lot of people kind of hold on to it because it gives them that crutch, right? How were you able to kind of adapt to a new narrative?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it was definitely a journey. It's taken me like at least a decade to switch that movie in my head. And one of it was, I like really nice things and I would get so triggered. So for me, it was like this trigger when I would, even, it's not even that fancy, but I go to anthropology and I would just like,
I love anthropology.
Me too, but I would just melt down and my boyfriend would be like, what's wrong with you? Like, just get something. And I'd be like, no, like, and all these thoughts, like all the old conditioning, like, we can't afford this. Like, we can't pay, you know, it's just all flooded in. So I had to train myself, you know, whether it was buying a candle or it's the little things, right? And then in terms of business, I think I did a lot of self-development. I mean, I've taken so many courses, I hired coaches, and I did all the work. And I think the most important work was just practicing it. Like, imagine, like I said, imagining, what if I am a millionaire? What if I have all the money in the world? Would I still be doing this? How would I treat this? It's such a hard process, honestly.
Yeah.
And then also not listening to the voices sometimes from the art community that are still living in that mindset. Like, oh, they're just trying to take our money. Oh, like, it's us against them. That was something I had to let go of and decide, like, that community is not for me. But it has been so healing, because when money's in the hands of good people, we can do a lot and we can create more. We can give back. So as I'm growing my business, I can also give back to causes that I care about, and that's been the best part. But the work continues.
This podcast is sponsored by me and collagedream.com. Get your collage kits and start making space for your personal narratives through collage. Want to dive in deeper? Take a collage therapy session. Nope, I'm not a doctor, nor am I an engineer, but I am an artist. Let me help you get through your blocks, creative inquiries, and guide your curiosity. Go to collagedream.com. The studio is open.
I also wanted to ask you about these communities, right? Because sometimes we can change, but the world around us doesn't change. So what are some of your go-to power moves to stay centered when perhaps the people around you, perhaps your family or your art community, is still in the old mentality?
Yeah, that's a great question. So sometimes, you want to love the people, you want to serve them, but sometimes they just aren't, they don't know where you're going and they don't see what you're seeing. So for me, it's leaning into people who have done something beyond what I've accomplished so far. And even if it's just a podcast or a book, or I love just watching like empowering, I don't know, talks, you name
Absolutely.
it. Like books, I think, are the best. And just leaning into the energy of possibility and not being in the now. And honestly, this kind of hack also helped me. There are moments in my business where I didn't think I was going to make it. Like literally would just look at the bill and think, oh my God, this is it. But so far we've always been able to come through, whether it is asking for help or, getting out a loan or whatever it was. And then just always thinking of the bigger vision, because when our brain is stuck in the moment, it can't make a good decision. It's just like looking at the fear, looking at the monster in front of you and thinking like, oh my God, we're dead, right? But if you leap like kind of almost beyond it and see like all the things that are possible between now and then, it helps you calm down and actually make a good decision and take action. So always kind of like leaping forward. I'm all about being present, but sometimes like when those situations come up or those people start saying things that aren't helpful, looking beyond all of that.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's such great advice. That's amazing. What are some of the books you're reading right now?
So I've just read Sahara Rose wrote a book. I think it was called Discover Your Dharma, which I loved. And then I'm reading the book 48 Laws of Power by that was so interesting. That was just like the most random read, but it was like one of those books that you feel like you shouldn't be reading. Just about psychology and like how you're manipulated too in society, right? And just being aware of that influence. There's so many. I mean, I love Marie Forleo. I loved her books, Everything is Figureoutable. I'm always reading something. So, and I love reading books from our community. We just read Make Your Art No Matter What. And
You
that
have
was
a
a book by
book
Charlotte.
club?
In Art Queens, we just are always like
Nice.
perpetually reading.
That's amazing. What? So tell me about this book, Make Your Art.
So Beth Pickens, she's an art consultant. I think she's based in Los Angeles, and she works with both artists and celebrities. And I think she's really good at just helping people like get really clear on their purpose. And the book has been really amazing because she actually shared something that was so powerful. Just had a conversation with her. The fact that some clients, even though they have a big fund or like the trust fund or a big grant or, maybe inheritance, they're not necessarily having an easier time in the studio. So this illusion that we have that money will solve our problems or give us the clarity or direction that we need is like total BS. So
Totally.
that was something that a great takeaway from that book, and she breaks it down and, shares how that is always like an illusion that we're chasing. So check that out.
Definitely. And can you tell me a little bit about what's your approach when you work with clients in your coaching?
Absolutely. Thank you. That's a fun question. I feel like I am really good at helping people build businesses. Like I see potential in my clients, but what ends up happening with especially one-on-one clients is a more holistic approach because
Absolutely.
everything is so affected. So if our health is not in order, if we have a deep embedded trauma or insecurity that we're experiencing on a daily basis, we're going to have a hard time promoting and sharing our art too. It's all related. So we usually uncover kind of the real reason behind the fear or, the lack of money or whatever, the fear of being seen. And then we work from there and we build it from a place of kind of unveiling any of like the shadow stuff, embracing it, loving on it, and then building from where we actually want to, the person we want to be and where we want to go. But it's definitely a process and I love it so much. And even, in a, like a membership style too, I think we all need a safe space to address some of those fears, and just share them.
Absolutely.
That's like, I mean, it sounds so silly, but that's like the most powerful part about coaching, just having that safe space.
Absolutely. So I do one-on-one art sessions with it's called collage therapy, even though I'm not a therapist or even an engineer. But my thing is also very much about safe space, right? So even in the Instagram lives that I do every Thursday, it's kind of creating a safe space to just play. And I love this idea of layers, right? I can help you with your business, but if you want to go deeper, you can always go deeper, right? And providing that hand, because I think sometimes artists, specifically artists, just need a knock on the door, just need a peek, like, oh, look, there's more, come play, you know? So to be able to do that, that you've been doing that for the past 5-7 years is fantastic, and you're obviously doing something right. So that's fantastic. Congratulations.
That's amazing. I'm so happy you're doing this work too. Like, there's never enough. And whenever people say like, oh, but there's so many art coaches, there's so many, I'm like, no, there's not enough. We cannot serve all the people with their own perspective, with their own background. So I'm so, so grateful that you're doing this work too.
Thank you. And isn't that right? And it's the same thing about empty walls. Like, you know, people are so like, oh my God, there's so many artists out there. Dime a dozen, but there's so many empty walls in the world, you know, in this block, in this city, in this building. That's amazing. So let me ask you when you mentioned your 10-year plan, what are some of the things you're looking forward to in your 10-year plan? I'm still caught up on that.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's on my mind because I'm working with a designer to actually basically relaunch our website for the 5-year anniversary. And it's a big project. It's going to take us all summer. There's a lot of stuff on there. So I'm very much thinking about the 10-year plan because I do not want to relaunch this website again for another few years.
Yeah.
Some of the things that I've been really thinking about is creating a space that feels luxurious and welcoming at the same time. So I feel like there's always been this like high-low art world thing where it's either like a crusty alley gallery or this beautiful like New York City, you know, white cube. And I want to create a space where kind of both of those things can exist, not necessarily like exactly at the same time, but in a way that feels natural, kind of like a city. You're wondering, there's ebbs and flows, there's different views, there's different vibes, and also continue to provide value. I think educating artists, empowering them. One of my biggest compliments I ever receive is like, you make me feel like it's possible. You make me feel like I can do it. You're not some special person. And I take that as a compliment because I'm like, yes, I'm not. I do not come from money. I don't come from art. I don't come from business. Like, anyone can figure this stuff out. So I want people to just really feel welcome, but I also want them to take responsibility for their education and empowerment too, not just, you know, pretty pictures or pretty art, but like really learn about each other, learn about the world and contribute your own voice to it.
That's huge. Responsibility is
a long
huge.
Time.
Well, actually, not the whole project. I think you can do it. But I think the idea of responsibility, that's so great that you bring that up, because I you know, for some reason, especially here in the US, the idea of arts, it's always like, oh, you know, art saves the day when something horrible happens. You know, they call for the artist to make art with the kids or, you know, create a monument, but it's forgotten any other time. But for some reason, we treat art as this kind of a sacred thing that we kind of forget. And then we feel entitled, like, oh, well, it's sacred. So, you know, I need a grant, or the government needs to give me money, or someone needs to give. We forget that as artists, we have so much power to engineer our own funds, even to create projects. So I think that's such an important thing to take responsibility of your dreams and what you want to accomplish in your art career, right?
I love that.
Now, you said you were 11 when you came to the US?
Yeah, I was about 12 years old.
What would the 12-year-old cat think of the cat today in front of me?
I think she'd think I'm pretty cool.
Right? I think so too.
I was a nerd. I was like, I had Harry Potter glasses. I was like a little overweight from all the processed food in America. And like, I sent so much love to that girl. She was like, I was always a dreamer, but it was a painful time too. Just that awkward teenage, oh, it was horrible. Cringy.
Oh, you almost make me want to tear up. You said, I sent so much love to that girl, because that's so important too, right? To send love to our former selves.
Yeah, they got us to where we are today. And it's such a precious time too, because I think kids, like, they're dreamers and they don't have like filters, or they don't have like the voices a lot of times. So
that's so cool. What's one of, before I let you go, what's one of your ideal projects you want to do with your work? Where do you want to see it displayed? Where do you want to?
That's a great, so many. This is a horrible question. Don't ask me that. Well, I would love to have some beautiful coffee books eventually. Yes. That are, you know, sustainable. Just because I don't want to rush into it, and you know, it's a thing, and I want it to be a really good experience. Eventually, I would love to have some retreats and like conferences. I would love to have people like yourself, you know, speak and share. I always love business conferences. Yeah. So. It's a weird thing.
I love them
too. A lot of artists are like, why? But I always get such good energy. And like, just being surrounded by successful people who overcame a lot of hardship is so empowering. So I'd love to give that to the art community. And yeah, continue writing and coaching and just doing all the things, but like with a bigger budget and nicer resources, right?
Yeah, Kat, I'm so excited for what you're doing and what you will continue to do. And I'm thrilled to have you on the show. So thank you for spending some time with us and letting us know that that little 12-year-old girl became an amazing superstar.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you.
Ciao.
That's it. Thanks for listening. If you've heard something that moved you, please share it. You are the candle that can ignite 1,000 flames. I am Luis Martin, the art engineer, sharing with you what moves me.